And welcome to the Wednesday, April 6, 2022 meeting of the House Public Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they're attached in the calendar event tab that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hands via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Damuth?
Present.
Representative Drefkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller? Representative Mueller? Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott, present.
Representative Shung?
Present.
Representative Joaquin?
Present.
Mr. Chair, report. We have quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Jordan, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Tuesday, April 5th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
I move, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Members, any discussion to the Jordan motion? Seeing none. This is a voice vote. Please unmute. All those in favor of the Jordan motion approving the minutes from Tuesday, April 5th, please indicate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Members, today we conclude our official committee work for this biennium with the marking up of the Education Finance Omnibus. Our process this morning will be to first move House File 4300 before us. Then we'll move the DE1, but not take any formal action on it until we consider any amendments to it. The committee will consider taking action on the A9. Then we'll vote to amend House File 4300 with the DE. Those will all be voice votes under our custom and usage. Member questions and discussion are, of course, welcome. Finally, we'll have a roll call vote to send the bill to the Tax Committee. Any questions on our process today? Seeing none, with that, I'd like to pass the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Before we get started, I would like to do a little cleanup from yesterday's meeting. Representative Drazkowski, I am going to call on Ms. Beckel to see if she has an answer to your question. Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. One moment.
No worries. Ms. Beckel, if you need a moment, we could always come back to you towards the end of the meeting. Representative Drazkowski, I trust that would be okay with you, just so we can get you your answer. Very good. Let's move on. Representative Dabney, thank you for that momentary pause. Would you like to make a motion to move House File 4300 before the committee with the recommendation it be referred to the Tax Committee?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Members of the committee and members of the public, we're looking to take a vote on this final motion by 11:55 a.m. today. Now that the bill is before the committee, Chair Dabney, would you like to move the DE1 to be before the committee?
So moved, Madam Chair.
As a reminder, we did a walkthrough of the DE on Monday of this week, and yesterday we heard from the public about the DE. Now we'll move to marking up the DE. So before we take formal action on the DE, we'll discuss and take action on the A4 amendment. Representative Dabney, I understand you are bringing the A4. Can you please tell us about this amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A4 contains some technical corrections, clarifies that the sites eligible for the community eligibility provision must participate in the program and provide free meals to their students, makes an adjustment to the transportation sparsity aid stream to match the amount on the spreadsheet, and clarifies language relating to the administration of the voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. It is largely technical in nature.
Okay, excellent. We will briefly hear from Ms. Beckel to walk us through the items on the spreadsheet that have been adjusted due to these changes. Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize, my spreadsheets froze at an inopportune time. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. There have been only a very few small changes to the spreadsheet. Okay, so this is the spreadsheet that I have showed you before. I'm just going to go down to the change. So lines 58 and 59 on this spreadsheet show the SANA Foundation fiscal year 23 partial cancellation of $650,000, and then the reappropriation of $650,000 with the allowance of using these funds until the end of fiscal year 24. Then there were a few other items. The Network for the Children of African Descent and the Wilderness Inquiry Programs are allowed to use their fiscal year 23 funding through fiscal year 25. And the rest of the changes to the spreadsheet are just correcting the public pre-K to the voluntary pre-kindergarten language. So those are the changes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Members, I think this would be a good opportunity to also have Mr. Strom walk through the runs that we have received for districts yesterday. Mr. Strom, may I turn it over to you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your packets today, and I'm not sure if Ms. Burt would like to pull the spreadsheet up for you. I caught her by surprise, I'm afraid, with this. In your packet today is a printout, and this is the start of the printouts that you'll see on this bill. This printout is in PDF form for you right now, but we will have the usual lookup table on the committee website in a little bit here, and that will allow you all to plug in a district number and get detailed information on a single page for each school district. I've tried to capture on this printout the primary areas where the aid is changing. The districts are organized in their usual fashion of ascending district order. At the top, the strata, districts are grouped in strata, so you can see some summary information. And as you walk across the printout, the first two items are the special education and English learner cross subsidy adjustments. You can see the average district statewide gets $485 per pupil more on the special education adjustment, and the average district gets $56 per pupil more on English learner cross subsidy aid. The next column is the student support staff aid. This is $110 on average. This is set as a dollars per pupil, as you may remember when we went through the bill. So there's not much variation as you look up and down the list. It's really whether the districts are in cooperatives or not that adds a little bit. The next column is the ESP and paraprofessional training aid that averages $7 per pupil. This is based on the count of paraprofessionals at each school site and varies by the school site's relative proportion of paras. The next category is the due process aid. Again, not much variation. $20 per pupil is the average. And the difference there is for the districts that are in co-ops or not. Then there's the one-time declining pupil aid. This is based on enrollment, fall 21 to fall 20. And the size of a district's decline will determine the amount. The average district is getting a $26 adjustment per pupil unit. Transportation sparsity adjustment averages $5 per pupil unit, but most districts are not average on this amount. So as you look up and down the printout, you'll see varying amounts by district. For example, at District 15, St. Francis has a relatively substantial change because of their high transportation costs. That will be the general way the transportation sparsity adjustment works, is that a few districts will see relatively large increases. The operating capital increase for the menstrual products is $2 per pupil, so that's the same all the way up and down the printout. The long-term facilities maintenance program, the age index was eliminated, and I've got an estimate of this right now that needs a little adjustment. There are a few districts that choose not to use the full $380 per pupil, and they're showing up as getting the full 380, though their boards would likely make the decision not to use the full amount. But here, again, the adjustment is the elimination of the age index. And on average, a district is $7 per pupil better off. Then the next to last column is the increase per pupil. The average district's going to be receiving an additional $719 per pupil. And depending on those first eight characteristics, those amounts will be larger or smaller than that. And then the last column is adding these all up and getting a total. And you can see that on the basis of funding that can be captured on the spreadsheet, about $682 million will be going out to school districts in ways that can be captured on the spreadsheet. One last word. I was reminded this morning that I missed the adjustment for the American Indian education minimum school size being increased. And on the next version of the printout that I do, that'll be included as well. So Madam Chair, members, that's a quick summary of the district by district printout. As I said, this is the PDF, and the lookup table should be on the website in a couple of days.
Thank you so much, Mr. Strom. Members, is there any discussion to the A4? Okay, hearing none, this will be a voice vote, so please unmute yourself. All of those in favor of adoption of the A4, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the A4 amendment is adopted. Seeing no further amendments to the DE, we will move to a voice vote to adopt the DE1 as amended. Members, just a reminder, this is not the final vote on the bill. Are there any questions? Okay, this again will be a voice vote, so please unmute yourself. All of those in favor of adopting the DE1 as amended, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the DE1 as amended is adopted. Our final motion will be to refer House File 4300 as amended to the Tax Committee. Is there any discussion to House File 4300 as amended? Okay. Representative Drazkowski, maybe we can come to your question now.
That's what I was hoping for, Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
I'm wondering if our fiscal staff could help us with a question we had that I had yesterday.
Very good. Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and apologies, Representative Drazkowski. Yes. So you asked yesterday if a budget have been set for fiscal years 22 and 23. So I'll just give you the base amount prior to last session for fiscal years 22 and 23 was 20,429,204,000. And after last year's first special session, that budget was increased by $557,456,000 to a total of 20,986,660,000.
Representative Drazkowski, any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Beckel. So does that include, that's a general fund number, Ms. Beckel. Do we have an all funds number too?
Ms. Beckel.
I believe that the only additional changes that were created in last year's first special session were expenditures from the special revenue fund that were transferred in from the general fund. So as far as changes, no changes to state dollars.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Ms. Beckel, do we know what the all funds expenditure is for the education finance area? Do we know what that number is? Maybe you don't have it before mm-hmm. you.
Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can definitely get back to you on that number. Are you asking for federal funds and local levy dollars as well?
Representative Drazkowski.
Well, I'm not sure what I'm asking, Madam Chair, Ms. Beckel. I'm looking for what the all funds spending would be, including federal funds, special funds, and other funds that normally is included in an all funds number. I don't think that local levy dollars are normally included in that, but it just appears, and I will work with Ms. Beckel members offline because I know there's other things happening here. But we had a huge increase in spending as part of this biennium that was included in last year's budget discussions. And I think I heard and saw in a spreadsheet that this proposal before us will increase spending on top of the $500 million increase that was proposed and passed by the last session, another $1.2 billion more. So we're going to take and triple the increase in the biennium, and that's what is being proposed before us today, is to triple the increase in spending. And I just think, Madam Chair and members, that this race by the Democrats to spend as much of the people's over collection in taxes that's accumulating in St. Paul as fast as they can is out of touch, out of step, and with Minnesotans and where they're at. They realize that our budget is fully set for the biennium. The government has all it needs. And when they see this legislature, at least in this House and the legislature, bringing proposals to spend, and disregard them, the people, the hardworking people of Minnesota, who are having too much money extracted from their wallets by this legislature, to take this money then and spend and triple down in the spending. I think that is what's going to lead to Democrats no longer having gavels next session, and for them to the people in Minnesota to render their decision, like similar to the decision that's being rendered here in a few minutes, They will render their decision next fall, and that will be to set a different course, a course that finally begins to respect them, the people of Minnesota that make this state go. So with that, I thank you for your indulgence, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Beckel. I'll follow up with you and others offline and get a better grasp of not only the raw number in these huge expenditures that happen both in the general fund spending and the all fund spending, but also the percentages to help Minnesotans better understand what the pursuit in this race to spend their money means in terms of their ability to compare that against what they have going on in their real lives. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Representative Damon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have comments specifically on the pre-K proposal. Well, I believe that is well-intentioned. I believe that this will further decimate our family child care providers who now will be actually competing with their local school districts. It's not realistic that school districts will view family child care providers as their partners in pre-K. This proposal will make private providers an extension of our local school, public school district, with private provider participation at the mercy of the Commissioner of Education's allotment. A serious proposal to improve and expand early learning would build on the successful Early Learning Scholarship Program. We know that early learning scholarships are a proven, flexible tool for parents to choose the provider that best meets the needs of their children and of their family. Thank you for the opportunity to make a few comments, and I will be a no vote on the bill this morning. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Damon. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank the committee for all the work that they did on this bill. This bill combines a lot of the great ideas everyone on our committee had, and I think it really gets to the heart of what we need to be talking about, and that's our kids. I know there's a lot of talk about, oh, we set the budget last year. What you have to remember is that we've underinvested in our schools over the decades. A 2% increase in formula does not get you very far when inflation is over 4 the majority of the time. We've heard from parents before the pandemic and after the pandemic that they want more focused attention in their classroom on their kids. They want to make sure that they have what they need to succeed. We've had mental health issues among our kids before the pandemic. The pandemic exacerbated everything in our safety net system and highlighted the inadequacies we've had all along. This is an investment in our future. This is an investment in our kids, and it's absolutely necessary. If folks look at the last 2 years as just normal and we already set the budget, I'm not even sure how to talk to you. But we need more, our kids need more, our kids deserve more. And that's what our parents have been asking us. And this bill hangs with all the rest of our budget and the investments we're making across the state in housing, in our healthcare, in our roads, and the biggest property tax cut we've had in 2 decades in Minnesota. So I encourage members to look at this as part of a big picture in investing in Minnesotans to make sure we're on the right track for the future. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Just for our members and the public, I want to note that Representative Mueller has joined us. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Former Representative Matt Intenza used to say it's a sad day in Minnesota. And for me, in regard to what I just heard from Representative Youakim, this is a sad day for our parents and for our students, because this is primarily, and I'm going to focus on policy, primarily a policy bill where the decisions are mandated through the department, through bureaucrats. And, looking at the data from the 2021 testing, and I know the MCA is just one measure, but it's a very important one because it's based on teaching the standards, the benchmarks, testing on the benchmarks of the standards. And our children need to have that focus. So my first question is for Adosh Uni, who I see is present with us today, because I don't believe he is. So may I ask him a question, Madam Chair?
Absolutely. Representative Erickson, your question?
Thank you. Mr. Uni, you know, I know that the department created the COMPASS program to recover lost learning. And looking at the data from the 2021 MCAs and the dismal percentages that we have for our minority students, what has changed in our schools, our districts and charters based on the COMPASS program? And, you know, could you delineate for us some of what might make a difference to recover this lost learning, because it's going to take years.
Mr. Uni?
Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Erickson, thank you for the question about the impact for the work that we've been doing through the pandemic, for the pandemic, with support from our federal funds, and what we're trying to achieve with the proposal through the Due North Plan for the COMPASS. For our COMPASS plan, we have been able to create a team that has had a focus on core academic subjects, working in partnership with our regional centers of excellence and our co-ops to be able to deliver best practices, as well as technical advice and assistance in terms of implementation around evidence-based strategies to improve our academic outcomes, as well as social, emotional, behavioral outcomes for our schools. I will say I don't have any data right now on me around what the impacts have been because of that work. I will be happy to go back and talk with our assistant commissioners who oversee this work. But what I would also like to point out is that there are several proposals in Representative Dabney and Representative Richardson's omnibus bill here that will go towards improving the outcomes for our students in a range of areas. There's a focus on one of the areas I think that everybody here is interested in, and I know over in the Senate, is the Bold Literacy Plan that'll have an intensive focus on literacy outcomes for our students and providing not only supports for teachers to be able to implement those strategies, but also bridging that knowing and doing gap. So being able to provide resources for administrators to help implement those programs, as well as partnerships with our regional centers that we know do great work. But also looking at investments in special education, looking at investments for English learners, providing a range of supports for our schools to be able to implement those supports that we know that our students needed before the pandemic, but that have been exacerbated, the needs that have been exacerbated by the pandemic.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Uni. You know, I'm hopeful that there are some things that are changing in our districts and charters in regard to achievement. But I'm very concerned, because even when we look at literacy and BOLD, as you're calling it, or letters training, it takes teachers a long time sometimes to really perfect those techniques to use, that strategy to use, and to change their focus from what it was earlier to what it is now. So we're going to experience years, I'm afraid, for some of our students, especially among our minority communities, to recover this lost learning. And so, you know, the fact that the department has made some decisions and will continue to make decisions based on the mandates in the bill without consulting parents, without really focusing on the student need, not wants, but need, is you know, really concerning to me, because our obligation as policymakers is to really focus on that. And when you talk about special education, that's money. But we have a convoluted special education funding formula, or it's formulas, and we've had no discussion on how to take care of the cost drivers. We've had no extensive discussion on what we should do about the census profiles that were put in by Representative Marquardt back in, I think, 2019. So there are so many things that we should have focused on this session that would really help our learners. And for that reason, you know, I continue to have concerns. But I think, Madam Chair, Mr. Uni wants to respond to me before I continue with my questions.
Mr. Uni.
Mr. Uni, you're muted.
My apologies, Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Erickson, I appreciate you bringing up the family engagement with the parents. I do want to make clear that in several of our proposals, family and parent engagement are a central component. One of the things that we did with our package in general is engage Minnesota constituents, and a lot of the proposals that find them that are represented here in Chair Dabney's omnibus bill are reflective of conversations that we've had with parents about what they need. I'll just point out the mental health package is one of those. So it's not just proposals that the department and the governor and lieutenant governor came up with. They are reflective of conversations we had with parents, but also we used federal funds over the summer to be able to start building out our public engagement team. And a core component of our public engagement team is communicating with parents and being able to help reflect back their concerns and their needs to help improve the lives and trajectories of their students into the work that we do every day, as well as the proposals that we come to you all to try to find support and collaboration on. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will continue just to make some comments. And I know I have worked with Mr. Oudy, so I know that he does his best to answer my questions to the best of his ability, but it's still very much a decision-making by bureaucrats in this proposal, and that shouldn't happen. Stakeholders is a word to use, but it doesn't necessarily mean that parents responded to what's in this proposal. I find that there are no provisions to protect our students when we have situations like the Minneapolis strike, and that should have been concerning to us, considering that those children were out of the classroom at least 2 weeks and have lost that learning. So there should have been some proposal brought forward that would protect our children in cases like this. I mean, what is going to happen to those children as they're left behind? As I mentioned before, no special education improvements. I hope that when we're on the floor, Representative Marquardt will answer some of my questions that I have concerning the census count that he proposed back in 2019. It's supposed to be working right now, but I don't know if we are identifying more children because of it. Are we spending more? We don't have answers to those questions. Another is, you know, our prep programs are going to just continue down the same avenue they've been following for years. And that's not really preparing our teachers to know how to teach reading using the scientific method, even though they tell me in my email correspondence with them that they're focusing on scientific reading. But my teacher candidates are telling me that's not true. That's not what they're learning to get used to use in the classroom for their students. So we need to take, or you need to, because I won't be here, a deep dive into what is happening in these preparation programs, that they aren't focusing on what is really needed for teaching our children how to read so that they can read to learn in their later years. And you know, sometimes their later years go into high school. So the concentration of making sure we focus on literacy all the way into high school is necessary. I recall the days when I taught reading to eighth and ninth graders. And, you know, I was just amazed at how far behind they were. And that's really decades ago that I worked on that, trying to get them up to grade level. And finally, you know, there's no accountability for either the Department of Education or PELSBY, and nothing in this proposal that's really going to focus on the accountability that we should be holding them to for accomplishing, for example, for MDE, all these mandates that are really going to be driven by the department. So, Madam Chair, you know, with more than 25 new mandates and 150 policy changes, at least that's what I've counted, and the fact that there's going to be a mandate to have a market report on charter schools. I mean, I know Senator Amber Reichka-Jung very well, not very well, but quite well, because she was the originator of charter schools in Minnesota. And I can't imagine that this isn't an insult to her for all the weeks, days, years that she spent in creating an option for parents to have charter schools. And now we're going to determine whether or not we should have more charter schools by a market study. I think we better consider that very carefully, because charter schools have become a really important choice for our parents. Again, parents. And this bill is lacking in parents. So, Madam Chair, with that, I will close my comments. And, of course, I'll be a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Wolgamont.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just wanted to take a moment to express to Chair Dabney and to the members of this committee how proud I am of what this bill does to fill the English language learning and special education funding gaps. As you've heard me talk about before, these cross-subsidies and unfunded mandates have had a devastating impact in my school district here in St. Cloud and in school districts all throughout our state. In fact, as has been mentioned, statewide, the difference between what it costs to provide special education services and what the state pays for is more than $700 million for special education. And the deficit in English language learner services is nearly $150 million. This, I think, is really an embarrassment to our state. And not only is it embarrassing, but it has huge consequences for our ability to ensure that all of our children get the education that they deserve. Rather than pitting our students against each other to get the funding, I am so proud that our education proposal provides more than $500 million annually over the next three fiscal years to significantly reduce the amount school districts pay to make up for these shortfalls. So again, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for your commitment to this. I'm so proud that our bill is going to put our money where our mandates are and make huge progress in filling these English language learning and special education funding gaps. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. I will be voting yes.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamont. Members, I'm going to just offer a few comments myself this time based on some of the things that I've heard. I'm just going to go on the record and say I'm very proud of this bill. I do recognize last year we did pass a budget, and it was a good budget, and we addressed many of the needs last year. But as we know, life changes. Life is very fluid, and we as a legislature need to be responsive to the needs of our schools, our students, the districts, the families, immediately. And that is what.
Madam Chair. Point of order.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is against our custom and usage for the chair to be talking about their preference for or against a bill. The chair's role is one to be neutral and to coordinate and carry out effectively a neutral approach to making sure the meeting runs properly. So really, Madam Chair, that's not a proper role of the chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. As a member, I am going to weigh in, though, and share my observations on this bill. What this bill does is it addresses some of the significant issues that we have heard as a body from our districts addressing our special ed cross-subsidy, our ELL cross-subsidy. It addresses the shortage that we are seeing in the needs of mental health. We are addressing the needs of our students by increasing our supports in those areas. When we are responsive to the issues that we hear about, we are ultimately addressing our students' success. And the components in this bill do just that. We have heard about the needs for additional support services, the ELL, the cross-subsidy issues with special ed. And again, I do want to remind members, this process is not complete. This is one step. From here, we move to hopefully a conference committee, and we work this out together. But I am proud of the fact that we have been responsive to the cries of the public and our students in our public school and charter school settings. So with that, I am going to continue our testimony. Now we'll give it to the leads of this committee. Representative Drazkowski, would you like to go first?
Well, Madam Chair, I simply would like to speak about what I just spoke about, and that is I'm concerned about our institution, how we head forward, Mr. Chair, or, excuse me, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, if indeed we have the chairs of our committees weighing in and opining upon the bills before them. I am going to raise this issue with the speaker. I think it is improper for our committees to be led by chairs who opine on bills and attempt to influence the decisions of the members of the committee. That is just fundamentally a wrong approach for a chair of any of the committees that is in the Minnesota House or Minnesota Senate to take. And I hope that this can be a one-off that does not repeat itself again. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, first of all, in the absence of, I'm gonna make sure I get this back a little bit. There we go. In the absence of ways and means targets, this bill really has no seriousness. This is simply a proposal with no path forward. And I'll just start my comments with a note of disappointment to the House DFL leadership. Leadership requires creating paths forward and giving possibilities. There may be disagreements about that, but we don't really have a clear path forward. I can tell you what I believe is going to happen. We'll see this proposal come forward. It'll be then sent to taxes, at which time some point tax will send it to Ways and Means, and then Ways and Means will try to combobble some type of targets together, which is completely reverse of the process, and it leaves no certainty on how you can talk about creating amendments or targets and all that. And I think that puts us at a great disadvantage here in this committee as the Education Finance Committee. I see this lack of leadership. Just today, again, we saw that announcement by Chair Richardson that a bill that had been worked on in the policy on the constitutional amendment to bring educational rights to kids will be killed. And that once again, I believe the House leadership in Ed Minnesota has worked to make sure this bill cannot come forward, which connecting the dots here shows we're really not serious about how we're going to put this together in the House DFL leadership. That coming to our work in this committee, we were not giving a fair process. And so here we're going to send this out and end up doing all this on the House floor with targets that nobody really knows that they exist. But here we are. And so in the spirit of the theater of the absurd, I will play my role in the theater and I'll give my comments on what I see in this bill. According to the district runs, Minneapolis and St. Paul gets $1,200 per pupil, while statewide average is gonna be $719. I don't care how you shake that out. When you look at the district runs to create a $481 discrepancy between statewide schools and what Minneapolis and St. Paul get, this creates a Minneapolis and St. Paul proposal. And I cannot and will not go back to my districts and accept to my superintendent's parents that they are to be treated as second-class education systems when we have a $481 per pupil discrepancy. We are widening the gap and not shortening it. We are creating more chasms, not equalization. And those of you that are going to go back to your districts and tout this, good for you. But remember, you're basically saying to them, we had to take this because this is the best we could get. And oh, yes, I know you're getting $481 per pupil less. This is not an ed funding bill, folks. This is a bribe to accept egregious mandates all the way across the board. And when you look at this bill, there's a mountain of mandates. And I'm just going to touch on a couple of them. We have come out of a situation where loss of learning and school for our kids is the number one concern. We see graduation rates still teetering, and we see achievement gap scores that are abysmal, that have no direction in the right way. MDE cannot ensure us or cannot guarantee to us that they've actually worked on even the simplest provisions that were put in place by Representative Marquardt and his work in previous education bills. And we saw that deficiencies. And now we're putting more mandates in place. And let me just talk about a couple of them. And let's just focus on the ethics studies mandates. And these are mandates. These are standalone mandates with expedited rulemaking. And we're in a situation where none of these mandates improve what we know on the reading, writing, and math scores on how this is going to help us in a skills-based economy. And let me just pause for 1 second, because there's ethical studies that include transgender student inclusion. And let me just put this out here. Lots of us, many of us, have lots of personal conversations with the transgender community and the understanding, the compassion, the support that needs to go to many of these families and neighbors in the transgender community. The last thing we should be doing is using this as a political divide and a pawn for these transgender youth. There are conversations to be had with these families, and what we should quit doing is talking about them, forcing mandated studies, and just simply talking about them like they are a different class of our society. We should be talking with them. And while there may be disagreements about how certain things are handled, there is room for compassion and conversation. And we as a legislature have to stop talking about classes of people like we know better and we live on this pedestal. There are families with all sorts of situations that we need to talk with and not about, and think that we're so good that we can create rulemaking and curriculum that solves those conversations. We are tearing families apart. We are tearing we're making the dysfunction of what happens at the organic level incredibly divisive. And we're all going to find it in November. And if you're not finding it now in your own elections and not realizing that we're part of the problem, then this all stems back to the fact that we can't even put a serious proposal together. We have expedited rulemaking that goes to the Department of Education that leaves out parents. Student discipline and recess. This is a terrible idea. As a teacher, I know one of the number one things I needed to do was build trust with students. And these children, I have taught these kids, you have taught these kids. I needed to bring them into the classroom when they were behind in homework. I needed to bring them in when they were behind, not because I was disciplining them, because I needed to build a relationship with them in a family structure that wasn't working. Oftentimes, I could get them to take down their walls and their defense mechanisms and open up. Yet, if I were to allow them to go back out in the schoolyard or to go back out in with all their peers, they would still use the exam. They would still exhibit the same behaviors of aggression, bullying, or other tactics that they only knew how to do because they were in survival mode. When we take the tools of teachers away so that they cannot build relationship with students, we once again are talking at students and not with them. This is a proposal that should be pulled from this, and it should allow our teachers to go back to build trust with their students, to break down those walls, not build more of those. There's no special ed reform here. There's a whole bunch of money that adds more hours, and it doesn't make one single change on how we do special ed and the reforms necessary in there. That's a problem. That's a big problem. And finally, members, there's zero accountability in this proposal to MDE or to Pell's B for them to come up with better solutions and results. And to all the special interest groups and lobbyists that paraded through our committee in the last couple of days and gave a nice pat on the head of this bill, you go back and explain the $481 differences. You go back and explain the mandates, and you go back and talk about how this is a bribe to accept mandates that our schools simply don't need, don't want, and the parents haven't asked for. So with that, members, I recommend a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Kresha. Representative Dabney, closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. This bill is the product of listening to Minnesota. Listening to students, listening to parents, listening to educators, listening to communities. It's a matter of our partnering with those same people in our role as the state legislature to help strengthen relationships between students and staff in schools, to assure that the curriculum is relevant to today's learners, and to provide the resources that we have to ensure that every child in Minnesota has access to a world-class education. We, first of all, pay our bills. We do what adults do. We get up in the morning, we go to work, come home at night, and we pay the bills. The over $700 million in deficit to the state's support for special education services is a bill that has come due. The $147 million deficit in state funding of English language learners is a bill that has come due. And it's time that we do what we have been sent to do, which is pay the bills to the state of Minnesota. In this proposal, we look out for the well-being and mental health of students so that they can succeed academically. We can continue our commitment to a richly diverse workforce in our schools, teachers, paraprofessionals, and support staff all. And we provide schools the resources that they need to build back from three long, difficult, disruptive years of a global pandemic. It's through this work that we assure that Minnesota, all of Minnesota, can thrive in the future. Members, I ask for your support for House File 4300, as amended.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Right now, the CLA will take the roll call referring House File 4300 as amended to the Tax Committee. Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Roll call voting will now commence. Chair Dabney?
Dabney votes aye.
Chair Dabney, aye. Representative Sandstead?
Aye.
Representative Sandstead, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Representative Kreisha, no. Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Bennett, no. Representative Daniels?
Daniels votes no.
Representative Daniels, no. Representative Damith?
No.
Representative Damith, no. Representative Drafkowski?
No.
Representative Drafkowski, no. Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Erickson, no. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Jordan, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Representative Marquardt, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Mueller, no. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Richardson, aye. Representative Thompson? Representative Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Representative Thompson, aye. Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott votes aye.
Representative Walgamott, aye. Representative Shung?
Aye.
Representative Shung, aye. Representative Joachim?
Joachim, aye.
Representative Joachim, aye. Madam Chair, I report to you we have 10 ayes and 7 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Hearing 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails and Rep. Dabney renews his motion to refer House File 4300 as amended to the Tax Committee and that staff be directed to make any technical corrections as necessary. Members, before I hand the virtual gavel back to Representative Dabney, I just want to say thank you to all of you for your work in this process on this bill and a very special shout out and thank you to our staff who has worked so hard to get us the information necessary to do our work. And with that, I will give the gavel back to you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate your work these last 3 days taking on the chair role. Members, this is the last scheduled hearing of this committee. Any future hearings will be at the call of the chair. At this point, I do not anticipate any, but if you haven't been paying attention the last few years, surprises can occur. As Representative Sandstead said, we need to remain fluid. Life changes. So I do not anticipate any future hearings, but future hearings will be at the call of the chair. I want to take just a moment and thank three staff members in particular who sit in the back and are less public in their support for the committee, but thank them for all of their work. Our committee revisor, Cassandra McGinnis, our House Public Information Specialist, Chris Carpenter, and our House Writer, Pratik Joshi. Again, thank you for your work supporting and communicating the work of this committee. Members, today marks the last Education Finance Committee hearing for three members of the committee, all of whom are not seeking re-election this fall. And I want to honor their work and give them a little opportunity here to talk about their experiences and their leadership over the years. The three of us, since I am one of them, Representative Erickson, Representative Marquardt, and myself, all came to this body as educators. We're all classroom teachers, but I wanted, as well as legislators, but I wanted to start with Representative Erickson, give you any opportunity you may want to take to, like I said, reflect on your time here, your leadership, your classroom experience. Representative Erickson, the place is yours.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. I didn't want to, I apologize for interrupting, but I do want to actually tee up Representative Erickson. When I came in,
I
just would like to say a couple of comments of her being an incredible mentor and friend. And my first memory was I voted against her in a committee when I was on ed policy as a young minority member. And to use an appropriate analysis, she kept me in from recess and let me know why I shouldn't do that. And but we had a great conversation, and it wasn't that she said I shouldn't do the vote. What she just said was, you know, we're a team. Please let me know so I can help with the conversations. And I have taken her words to heart. I've taken her mentorship into my soul, and it is what I use as I go forward. So with that, Representative Erickson, I hope you offer a couple comments, and I just want to thank you for being a mentor to me, to our caucus side, and the conversations to the education community as a whole.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Representative Erickson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your years of service, too. I know we can sound a little bit brutal when we're making our comments in regard to omnibus bills especially, but I know that we've had a respect for one another. I was first elected in 1998 in a special election, so I had two elections in 1998, one in January, one in November, and served then until 2008 when I lost my re-election and actually thought I retired. But my voters had something else in mind. So I ran again in 10 and have served till now when I was paired with my former student and our great teammate Kirk Dowd and said it's time to retire finally. So that makes 23 years for me. I had 11 at the beginning, and I had 6 years in the majority and five in the minority during those 11 years, and worked very closely with Representative Mariani. We had many discussions at night, during the day. We went back and forth between our offices to talk about policy. Again, we had great differences, but we got along really well and respected one another. So that was enjoyable for me when I served in the minority. I was a vice chair for a short time, I think for one session, before the 2006 and 2008 elections when we lost our majority. When I came back after the 2010 election, half and half, 6 years in the majority and 6 years in the minority. And six of those years, I was the chair of policy. And of course, I reveled in that because I loved the classroom. And when I ran in 1998 in the special election, it was under protest. I did not want to leave my classroom. I told my predecessor, who wanted to become my first predecessor, who wanted to become a bureaucrat, that, and I had been his campaign manager, that that was not the place for me. The place for me was with my students. And I did not retire until 2000. So I had 3 years teaching and legislating, but I could not be a highly qualified teacher in the classroom those 3 years without retiring because, you know, those of us who have taught and those of you who know teachers know how hard we work to make our classroom students effective, to help them achieve, look towards success. And I love that. And if I hadn't become a legislator, I probably would still be in the classroom, even though I just recently turned 80. So, you know, I wouldn't have any problems with being with that student. I told my superintendent at Princeton he probably will welcome me, or maybe not, as a substitute teacher. But there have been great successes over the years. I've worked with Representative Mark Ward closely as well. He was the author, as you know, of the World's Best Workforce, which I still have some questions about, but he did that. And Representative Dabney as well has had successes and brought forth, you know, for me, it's always the policy side that I look at. But, you know, a legislator is only as, I think, as successful as staff. The staff that surround us. And so I want to really thank staff on my team and, of course, nonpartisan team, because they have been what is, have helped me achieve the policy that I thought was best for our children. So, of course, we all know Jody Withers and what a great success he has been for all of us, because he knows the statutes by memory and has taught me how to really delve into them and look for the up and the down in how we have created those statutes. So Jody Withers, thank you so much. And I know that's from all of us because you help all of us. Carmen Johnson is not here, but I know that Representative Marquardt and Representative Dabney remember her. She was one of my CAs, Casey Peterson also. And I had others along the way because my CAs liked to work for me and then move on to becoming lobbyists. But, you know, nonpartisan too brings great success to chairs and to members. And of course, Mr. Strom has bailed me out many times with financial issues that I've had in my district. I will never forget the help he gave me for Ogilvy, who was in a maximum effort situation where it was gonna cost them a lot of dollars, and we worked out some legislation to help them survive, and I was so grateful for that. Lisa Larson preceded Christina Pera, and of course, I worked many, many years with her in the majority and the majority, and she's one of the reasons I have that special section on parents' rights. We created that together. But I am so grateful for Christina Pera, because Christina Pera has just been a godsend to our nonpartisan in the way that she writes legislation, in the way that she helps us correct so that we're more specific, we're not vague, and we really say what we're intending to say. And so, Ms. Pera, I really thank you for all the help that you gave me. In fact, I am tearing up a little bit because I was so grateful for how you helped me achieve the reformation of teacher licensure. We worked so long on that. For those of you who don't know it, when I counted up the hours that Ms. Pera, Mr. Withers, and I and others spent, it was close to 1,000 hours that we spent in trying to achieve that. And I can't forget Senator Pratt as well and his staff, because we worked on that. And we worked with Governor Mark Dayton. And of course, we worked with Commissioner Brenda Casellias. And, you know, together with all of that, that was just almost insurmountable, but we achieved it. And I think that it's going to pay dividends. And so, Mr. Chair, with that said, and to thank my team and also those on our committee with whom I have served over these many years, this has been an honor and something I'll never forget. And I won't forget most of you. And thank you for giving me this time. God bless you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And Representative Erickson, you mentioned Carmen Johnson. And one of my more distinct memories of when you were chairing education policy was one day as committee was gathering but had not gaveled in yet, Carmen came over and leaned down next to me and quietly said, "I think the chair threw you under the bus this morning, but it's going to be, I think it'll be okay." And in fact, what it was you were asking me to carry a more challenging piece of legislation that we then worked on a fully bipartisan basis with you as second author. And it was just Carmen's way of introducing the topic. Yeah. She was delightful to work with.
Yeah. Thank you.
And she occasionally emails me, and I always enjoy hearing from her. So thank you.
Thanks.
Representative Marquardt, you are not only ending 22 years here at the legislature, but a longer life of public service, having served locally in Dilworth. And you are doing the somewhat unexpected of returning to the classroom next full time. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to remember how to teach in February, but I imagine it's in there somewhere. So you are past chair of this committee, as well as a longtime member, and I want to offer you the opportunity to reflect and share as well today. Chair Markworth.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Dabney. And, you know, you and I came in both in 2001, and we sat next to each other on the House floor that first term. And I have really appreciated and respected and valued your work in all committees, but especially here as chair the last 4 years on this Education Finance Committee. Thank you for your great work on behalf of Minnesotans. And I still remember my very first committee meeting ever in the legislature in January of 2001 was education policy, and the chairperson was Harry Mears. And I still remember him holding up a candy bar, a Mars candy bar, saying, "This is not how you pronounce my name. It's Representative Mears." And I still remember that. And, you know, I mentioned him too, because, you know, one of the things he said that I remember is that he said, "Our state's most precious resource is our young people." And when you think about that as kind of a phrase to guide you for the next 22 years in the legislature, I think it was a good one. But I've always very much been honored and enjoyed serving on the Education Policy and Education Finance Committee and chairing it for some time. And just really some thank yous. And, you know, thank you to the staff, as Representative Erickson mentioned. Just tremendous. And, you know, Tim Strom, you were there 22 years ago, and you're just amazing. And putting out all of these runs and every information we have. And so thanks to all the staff, but you kind of represent the education staff as I know it, Mr. Strom. So thank you for that. I really want to thank my students. As Chair Dabney mentioned, I'm going back for my 40th year of teaching this fall. And it was my students who kept me grounded and knowing what, as I served on this committee, what was important as far as how we really can deliver for students. And thank the members. We, you know, the thing about this body is, you know, we might disagree on how to get to certain areas, but everyone and in this committee always wanted to do what was best for our schools and our students. There was no doubt ever about that. Every single member valued our schools, valued our education, valued our students. And it was just, we differ on how to get there, which is what the legislature and our great democracy is all about. So it's been a great honor to serve this institution, but especially to serve on education finance, because that is the state's top priority. We back that up because that's where we put our money, is in education. And that Minnesota's always been known as the education state. And all of the members that I've served with on this committee has always moved to point us in that direction. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. It's been an honor to serve.
And a pleasure to serve with you, Chair Markworth. Members, I'm going to take a few minutes, and I think you'll hear some of the same gratitude that you heard from Representative Erickson and Representative Markworth, that I will expand on a little bit in my own thoughts. So I want to start by thanking the Speaker for entrusting me with this gavel these past 4 years. It is the state's top priority, and to have had that gavel is very meaningful to me. I also want to thank the members on both sides of the aisle who have served on this committee or presented bills in front of this committee for trusting me with my leadership of this committee. I want to thank the educators of the state who wake up every morning and wrap their arms around the children of Minnesota, but then also step forward as leaders in the interest of their students, in the interest of their professions, and come here and advocate, whether that's directly or indirectly. It's been an honor to work with educators and advocates over the years to protect and support children with disabilities, to create dedicated funding for dual enrollment opportunities to make college more accessible for all students. I've challenged schools to create safe and affirming cultures for all students, worked to support adults who, like myself, needed to complete high school by providing a choice of paths to that golden ticket, had a special emphasis on immigrants who came to this country with disrupted educational experiences, on their need to complete high school and start college so that they could take their place in the United States, and helped create new paths for people of color and Native American Minnesotans to become teachers, and so much more. Throughout that, I've attempted to assure that the needs and voices of our richly diverse community and state were heard in my work and the work of this committee. It's been an honor and at times a challenge and often an opportunity for personal growth that I'm grateful for. This is where I pick up and on the gratitude to staff, the nonpartisan, the quiet staff behind us that I've already mentioned, but also the committee staff who we all interact with and the public occasionally gets to hear from. We know that they make this place run, they make us look good, and that they sacrifice their time and their families in the service of the state. Chairing a committee like this provides a much greater and closer appreciation of the work that they do. Our bill this year is 232 pages, and the education staff team put in hundreds of collective hours to make sure that it was written right, that everything balanced, and that it was meticulous. Their dedication to getting the concepts that we provide them into statute precisely and on time while meeting impossible deadlines is amazing. Mr. Strom's massive spreadsheet that models every aid stream that funds the state's education system. Be careful what questions you ask Tim Strom. He will provide you with the answer consistently. His wise counsel, I'm grateful for his wise counsel and insights, along with his gentle humor, and found it invaluable as we look at not just putting together a bill, but his work to strengthen public education opportunities in Minnesota. Thank you, Tim. Ms. Pera's ability, as Representative Erickson mentioned, to listen deeply to members and the public and advocates, to discern our policy goals and hopes, and then translate those into the technical legal language of statutes that upholds the rule of law in an elegant way. Thank you, Ms. Pera. Ms. Beckel, new to the committee this year, who out of the gate masterfully managed the balance of $3.275 billion spreadsheet. I'm told that's the second largest spreadsheet in the legislature. I don't have, as you know, the mind for numbers that you do, and I'm so glad that you have that mind and spend it here. To Mr. Rudquist, DFL staff, he always has the answer I need without fail. He balances his kind of comprehensive knowledge of the bill with the ability to provide the right fact, the right insight at the right time. Amazing. And I could not imagine working without his support. To Mr. Lee, who stepped in the committee legislative assistant role at first in an entirely virtual environment, he attacked that steep learning curve with commitment and inquisitiveness, taking on expanded responsibilities along the way. Thank you, Mr. Lee. And I could not imagine leading this committee without Ms. Bird. The reason that this committee runs as well as it does, that we hit our goals, that we meet our deadlines, that we have the opportunity to hear from Minnesotans across the state and that we are able to deliver for Minnesota students and educators is because of Ms. Burt's work behind the scenes, tireless work. I rely on her not just for her organizational skills, but her insights on Minnesota, the legislative process, what is going on elsewhere in the House and how that impacts our committee and public education, and so much more. Thank you, Ms. Burt. I rely on each of these individuals for insights and guidance and their professionalism. They have each done this work while we transition through a global pandemic and then back again, at least back partially. I do miss meeting in person, the casual interaction with members and the staff and the public. It's an easier and better way to legislate than the COVID-19 bug allowed us to do. It's been disruptive, and the staff of this committee have made sure that we were able to continue to function and lead and provide for the students of Minnesota. It's a great team, and I'm particularly lucky and thankful to have been a part of it. I also want to thank Chairs Joachim and Chair Richardson, the two education policy chairs that I've had the privilege to work closely with these last 4 years. They've entrusted me with the product of their months of committee work and leadership, and then joined me in moving our joint efforts forward. They've led their committee's significant bodies of work and then transitioned rapidly after the first legislative deadline to the third legislative deadline with this bill. I've learned much from the both of them, their tenacity, their insights, and their leadership. Thank you. I first came here 22 years ago, as Representative Marquardt indicated. I was a middle and high school social studies teacher with an infant daughter. I was a union and community activist and leader. That daughter's now in college, looking at her last year at the university. My daughter and son have never known a time in their lives when dad wasn't in the legislature and wasn't wanting to talk to them about school. That'll be a change for them. Public education was and is my passion and my commitment. As a high school dropout myself, I know what it is to live without an education and to find doors of opportunity closed. And I think that that has been a significant motivator for me. So education has been my path. It's been bumpy occasionally. And I've tried through my work on this committee over the years to make that path more open to others. I've always thought that it is in this committee that Minnesota gathers to discuss the well-being of its children and families and to create a future for all of us together. I can't imagine more important work. It's now time for me to step aside and let other voices come forward. I've witnessed a remarkable transition, particularly these last few years as it's accelerated, one that I hope will continue of new, more diverse and representative leadership stepping forward in Minnesota and into elected office. That is as it should be, assuring that everyone has a seat at the table and a voice that is heard. We do our best collaborative work for Minnesota when we hear the mosaic of voices from across our communities. We do the work of this committee and this state better with everyone at the table. Members, it's been a privilege to serve in this body and to chair this committee these last 4 years. I thank you for your time, your attention, your commitment, and your patience. With that, members, we are adjourned.